deep down inside, you don't want to do it. The chances that for you to do it are so small. Because something is telling you in terms of memory that this is not the way to behave. And unless this something, which is in the form of a memory pattern, telling you that is not the way to behave, you could not have known or felt that way unless you passed through that particular experience before. And the feelings that comes up in you is warning you as a guideline to behave. And it's memory. Now, since we don't have a total memory of all that has occurred in this mechanism right through this the pregnant stage on a conscious level, it is not impossible to recall everything that occurred during the pregnant stage in the human brain. But you as a human being, not capable of recalling it voluntarily on a conscious level, puts you in dilemma. You're fighting for it. When it comes back, that you can actually see yourself going through the 9 months of pregnancy inside of your body, in your own memory. This takes you into another level of awareness, that you begin to realize that this is not the first time. And when you go beyond that state now, the prenatal state, way beyond the sperm state, to see where you have actually existed, and at the bridge between life form to life form, in the energy rhythm, is memory. Now, they even went as far as to call that memory a particular name. They call it Akash, or Akashic, or God's Book of Remembrance. In other words, God has got a computer. Forget the word God, let's say the cosmic imprinting process left in the atomic structure is the universal memory. The universal memory is your total nature, and you are living it out in a time relationship with yourself. And when you're afraid, it's because you don't have a memory of it. If you have a memory of it, you're not afraid. If you knew why something went wrong 1,000 years ago and causing you to have a swollen toe, you wouldn't worry. It's because you don't know why, then you go find out. You go and ask a doc. He says, well, bacteria has invaded your toe. But why should the bacteria invade my toe and not the other one? Why don't they invade my hand? So they're not because the bacteria invades the toe, it makes solves the problem. The reason is why it doesn't invade any other part of the body, only that particular part. There got to be a reason for that, for it happening only in that one spot. Well, there was a man who had a certain pain in his back. He went to many doctors. He went even to psychiatrists. And they all tried to tell him that it had to do with early childhood days. But it couldn't get rid of the pain and release the thought pattern. One day, he met a metaphysician who told him, 10,000 years ago, you were a land crab. In those days, land crabs had no markings on their back. They were smooth, round, clear, and it used to glisten like a mirror. And you were busy enjoying some carrion on top of a rock when a tidal wave came along, swept you and smashed you against another rock and left the imprint. And now you're born as a human being carrying that print. So enjoy your pain in your back because you were a crab. Now, if this memory is satisfying for that man, not on the intellectual basis, if it's possible for him now to close his eyes and revert back to the scenes of 10 million years ago and seeing himself as a land crab smashed against the rock, and the whole scenery of life form to life form, the memory carried over. Now, to the present day where he's feeling this strange pain in his back, this would satisfy the mind and remove the agony, the memory of the cause. Once we can recall where something originates in us, that appears on the physical frame to be a discomfort, we will no longer live in a discomfort because we will accept the cause. But it's because we can't recall it, we continue to live in the discomfort of it. We continue to feed it discomfort. Yes, that is your true humanness. That is why we are humans. That is the only way we can really be human. We, as long as we accept it, we are free. Could the what? Yes, your memory bank is the storehouse of all your experiences that are discomforting to your body form at the time, which repeats itself in the form of an illness, and you now call it karma. Karma is a Sanskrit word for action and reaction. Jesus merely say, what you sow, you reap. All right, if I sow corn and reap cherries, I'm a very successful farmer. But all right. So memory is a thing that is necessary for me to remember what I sow. I walk along and fall down and break my leg, and somebody comes along and says to me, it's your karma. Good and fine. I'd accept this karma. But what would linger in my memory, is in my mind, is this: where did I start this karma? I don't refuse its karma. I don't resent the fact that I walk and broke my leg, or somebody got in an argument with me and broke my leg. I don't refuse that or don't reject that. But the thing that is in my consciousness is this: where did I start it? The person may say to me, if the person is aware, he says, well, you started it way back in Atlantis. Good, Atlantis don't exist. And granted that I may accept the fact that I've lived many times, and in some place in Atlantis, I'm accepting his word. I may not discredit his word, I have to trust his word until I have the living experience inside that in Atlantis I did kick somebody and broke that person's leg or hurt myself, and now it's coming back to me. Now, what is satisfying to my aching leg or broken leg in this present form would be the memory of an experience where it actually, I see the image itself just as much as this person is seeing it. Because that person is capable of seeing the experience and relating to my conscious level that it had occurred and that I am now suffering or paying for it, the thing that would be satisfying to me and would heal me of the discomfort is the fact that I can look back and see it. If I can dream it. Now, remember, dreams is a preview and an aid to going back into memory. It's a to go back into the Akashic records, into the recording process of nature, where all things are recorded in time sequence. A dream is that particular opportunity. It is nature's library card. Once you pay your dues, you can draw from the library, and you can have your regular dreams. See, some of us don't pay our dues, then we don't have no more dreams. And you're long overdue on certain dreams. It sounds funny and comical, but there is nothing funny or comical in this physical world that is not on the other realm. Exactly how you act and behave here to your fellow man is exactly how the other realm is set up. As it is in heaven, so it is on earth. Meaning, as you behave on a logical, physical level, in your mental, electrical level is the same way. So we are selling ourselves short by not returning the book back to the library where the time is due. We're selling ourselves short electrically and mentally by delaying certain dream processes that could help us see the causes of many of our problems. Go ahead, finish. If we accept, we are released. Good and fine. Up to a certain portion of your spiritual growth. When you see the cause and it satisfies that mental anguish of intimacy between you and your higher self, then that experience is very important for you to have, because you'll always have some little mental anguish inside. Is there really some force surrounding us that sustains us? You see, the mind is never truly satisfied of the existence of God. It's the soul that is satisfied with the existence of God. Soul is beingness. Soul does not question. But mind will always question. Mind will always doubt. Mind will always try to manipulate the possibilities and the advantages and the disadvantages. Mind will do that. So mind is the one thing we have to finally resolve. Now Jesus is saying, how do we trick the mind to make it work for us? By giving us a very simple statement. Blessed are they who have not seen and believe. Because if you don't use your five senses and you accept, you have already out-tricked the mind. There's no way for the mind to trick you now. You see? But if you can't accept and you have this mental reservation, this mental yearning, you'll need the experience. I have a friend of mine. When I told her certain experiences about herself years ago in Dallas, it resolved the pain and the anguish in her. And as she advanced, she was always saying in her mind, well, I know, Adano, you see it, but I don't see it, but still. So one day she went to Hawaii and she met a kahuna priest, and all she asked the kahuna priest is the blessing of recall. So he prayed and gave her the blessing of recall. 2 hours after, she had the recall of seeing herself and several friends who turned out to be her sisters and mother in a past life, but these friends were the ones she was staying with in Hawaii, all being engulfed in the lava from a particular volcano hundreds of years ago. And she had to relive the experience of the depth in the volcano with her parents. And the area that she went to see the kahuna priest, where she was granted the gift of recall, was the very same volcano. So she was convinced now, because mental recall came through loud and clear. It removed every doubt save one. The nausea and the sensation of the actual burning odor of the flesh, it remained in her nostrils for all the time she was in Hawaii till she came back to the States. Have you ever dreamed you stump your toe and wake up feeling your toe hurting you? This is the reason why recall has a peculiarity. When we go into those levels of consciousness, their impressions on the mechanism tend to carry over their intensity into the conscious state. The memory impression is too deep. Therefore, we are not allowed, or we are protected against ourselves of having too many of these impressions come to the surface too fast, and we will live in that realm with the anguish with it. So we have to protect ourselves against that. And nature has done that by giving us forgetfulness, conscious amnesia, in the form of forgetfulness, absent-mindedness. Yes.
And also I went to my gem shop and I inhaled the fumes of the gem and it created a taste in my mouth. Now, kind of remembering the mind.
Yes, you're remembering back, and the impressions are leaving and from a past experience is transmitting to your physical body at a conscious level. it's all memory pattern. So they do carry over. And we don't want them to carry over too much when you're not equipped to handle it, because the anguish is too strong. And one second, this young lady has a question first. No, no. Yes, all things are karmic, but some karmic conditions are present. Not necessarily past. The causes are already in previous life, but some are already here in which we ourselves are exposed to it and we are bringing it to the surface. And it's a matter of recognizing it and correcting it. So, the point is this. If he has done it in a previous life, good and fine. But correcting it now is the important thing. And if you can recognize it now in the present state, that it might be started with something in the present state. You see, karma, not only from past karma, but also we have some that when we are born with, some conditions that we're born and we're carrying on, we have to work them out. We still have those to work to. So if there are certain things that he has done and is doing that are detrimental to his mechanism, it'll correct itself if you apply it, if you apply the remedy to it. Huh? Yes, meditation is a way vicariously to clear up the consciousness of past memory and bring it to the surface, because it's the only way you can bring it without really hurting the body. You can bring up these experiences of past lives without actually hurting the body by carrying over the sensations through the meditation and reliving it. Now, yes, you burn it up because the upward movement of the energy is to expand the consciousness, the downward movement of the energy is to burn up the karmic residues. So we are burning up karma in the process of meditation. And we are not always aware of it, it's been burnt up. Now, the exposure to anyone who meditates helps to burn up karma. There are lots of ways to burn up the karmic debt. An initiate, not only a master. See, a master is an initiate. The initiate is the light of the world while he is in the world. His vibratory rate is linked to the master rate of the universe. And once he emanates from that level, everything he comes in contact is raised if he accepts it. So if you meet the initiate and he is the individual who meditates, his vibratory rate will raise other individuals. So each one of us here potentially is linked up and in that master consciousness and is vibrating from that state. And others who come in contact are lifted up. So you are helping that individual. Yeah. Now, you're worried about your son's feet. But the mere fact that he's exposed to contact with an initiate life, it can be removed. Not necessarily by the drug method or the drugless method. Love also can remove the thing from the boy. There are many ways in which the initiate can work. The important thing is that he must be exposed. All right. We don't go around trying to heal people, and we don't try to impose our wills upon others unless we are asked. And that's the reason why the initiate is not going around trying to straighten out the world's mess. he's already a ransom for the world. And when the other individual asks, then he will intercede. But in the meantime, he's concerned with raising the vibratory level of the world with his own consciousness. If I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. The initiate is the light of the world by lifting his consciousness above the normal pull of the sensory nature of men. And by being as human as possible. Now, it's the most difficult thing to be a true human being. A true human being has all the forces of his body functioning on a normal rate. In love, joy, compassion, understanding, service, devotion, all these things are flowing naturally through him. He's a natural being. And because he's natural, he has a higher ratio of vibratory feeling. He's at peace with himself from inside. He doesn't get into that state where he will destroy his physical frame by anger. He's at peace. That doesn't say he may not have spiritual indignation or righteous indignation. He may have righteous indignation to chastise us. But the point is this. He is conscious all the time of this audible sound that is vibrating in his body. This audible energy that vibrates within him and is surrounding him. And every time he listens to it and feels it, he's identified with it. And that is why he's the light in the world. Because he sees the light, he hears the sound, and he feels the bliss. Once he does that constantly, he's reacting correctly in the world. Yes?
Are we enough of a light to have that reconciliation technique work in the other path that is not an initiate?
As I said before, if you were to introduce the reconciliation posture into your home and it was never done before, they can say which woman you went with or which man you went with.
So you can't really be reconciled.
No, you know you have... Ah! You see, You see, you have a confrontation and you say to the person, let us resolve this and reconcile ourselves. And you want to resolve it in the act of sex. So they expect a certain way already because they've been conditioned a certain way. And for you to come along and take another posture to reconcile them, it triggers suspicion in their mind. Well, wait a minute. So once the suspicion is triggered in their mind, it says, well, he must have went out with some other woman or she must have went out with some other man. This suspicion is a normal condition. But if you are trying to relate to that person and say, well, look, the human body is a peculiar mechanism. When we were born, or before we were born, we were all in the womb. And in the womb, everybody was lying on his side. So, you don't start the reconciliation posture by an abrupt confrontation with the opposite partner. You start the reconciliation by the first night of trying to create tactile contact. The stroking. That's why I said massage is very important first to lead up to all the relationship of reconciling. One is the massage of the body, rubbing the shoulder. Rubbing the neck. And as I said, the male body requires the shoulder, the female body requires the neck, the head. The first night of reconciling can be the night of tactile bond, or restoring the tactile communication between each other, not consummating into anything, but restoring a tactile bond of feeling for each other. The second night can restore the affinity of the body by taking a bath together. Because this will regain again a reconciliation process. Then the third night could be the lying down in the bed on the back and then eventually turning on the side. Now turning on the side would create an interest and the cuddling up situation, because after all, everybody loves to cuddle. So you're not telling them that you're going to put them in the reconciliation position, because then they're going to be suspicious of you. But you're leading them up to the point where they're finally realizing that cuddling up can be a marvelous relationship in reconciling. Then, as you move your hands along the back and they feel this soft electrical touch, it stimulates them, then you can say, well, now try it on my back, massage my back. And the moment that person relates, then you are leading up to the actual act in the reconciliation process. So it takes a few days to break down the barriers of suspicion. You don't want the person to suddenly reconcile themselves and have a suspicious nature that something is wrong. You want to lead them into the fact that this is a natural relationship and it has nothing to do with infidelity or unfaithfulness, simply that the two individuals are now trying to understand their body forms.
Talk about experimentation, and most young people have this in their mind as a thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think most
young
people probably do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it
would
be
introduced
announcement of what it was.
You see, if you openly tell the opposite partner that this is an experimentation, then you automatically program the mind against all feelings of warmth. It's a mechanical involvement for excitement and for stimulation. It is not a reconciliation of the true sense of the word, which you're trying to rebuild a broken relationship brought on by confrontations. We are living as a householder. We are living as husband and wife. But these conditions are brought on and strained by various conditions in our lives where we may lose the feeling and the tendency to relate, thus developing into impotency or fragility. And you don't want that to happen to the mechanism, because then sooner or later we turn off. Our children turn off at 13 years of age to our voices. After 13, you can't cope with them. There is no way. 13 is the age when they turn off. You see, and husbands and wives turn off at certain stages inside because of repetitive patterns that are building up by these sound waves and the biorhythms of the body, and not realizing the male cycle and the female cycle. The female has her cycles and the male has his cycles, but he is not so conscious of it, except that he only knows the so-called horniness, which is a very poor way of understanding his body. The female, she has her cycles, and the male is conscious of it because of the menstrual relationship and the actions involved. But in the male, he is not so aware of it, so his is different. Yet his also leads to complications if he can't relate to it. And the complications are taken for granted as, that's the way I am, accept me as I am. But that is not a genuine way to relate, because that is only avoiding the issue of what is to be a human being. You follow? Now, it's when the human being can see that these are rhythms, and this is where we come back to the bracelet now. When you're having the menstrual cycles, you switch it to the left hand. And this helps to release the stress. This releases the stress for the female. But watch out when you're looking at the male body and see where it is.
You also told me once that it's because we're ill. So bad.
Right. Switch it, right.
So you don't really know what's going on.
Right.
Maybe somebody stubbed
their toe. See, under normal conditions, you wear it on the right side of the body because the polarity is stabilized. When there is an excessive magnetic pull, like the menstrual cycle, or the body rhythms of the body, or an injury of some type, you always switch it to the left side to polarize it back. Now, in the male mechanism, it takes 35 days to 40 days for his rhythms to slow down or correct themselves. He's got a longer rhythm than a female body. A female body is every 28 days, but a male body is 35, the minimum, to 45 days for his rhythm. But he's not even aware of it. And this is especially now in the young people, why there's tremendous urge for masturbation, male or female, because the cycles come so close. And it runs for a longer period in the boy than in the girl. And is the constant itching for activity. And when you compound that with wrong nutrition, which is highly incensed by spices and carbonated substances in the body, then the male child, is far more a difficult problem to handle. See, the female body in the girl, she would stable off, or because she would release the menstrual fluids. But in the male body, he gets start building up more and more. Now, compounding that with alcohol and compounding that with smoking, these nerves get far more fired up. Then when you go and compound that with drugs, then it's even more difficult because of these cycles. There's just in no way that these cycles are going to let up. We have the female menopause when this condition tapers off. We have the male menopause too. It's not only a one-way streak. There's no such thing as a one-way streak. You got both male and female cycles where they shut off. So it's to understand that you don't want these conditions to come in prematurely. You don't want them to come in and shut down the natural relationship between two individuals as a household activity. You want to understand their mechanics and to relate to it properly so that you can extend the vitality of the human body long past the accepted norm of shutdown. See? Now, the accepted norm of shutdown is about 50 years for the female body, and it's about so same way around 55 or 60 years for the male body. But as I said, in ancient times, man was able to procreate longer than that, and he hasn't altered the movement of the earth, because 365 days is still 365 days. It still makes a year. And 28 days still makes one lunar cycle. And we have 13 lunar cycles in 1 year. So basically, man or woman is not altering that. All he's altering is the fact that he has programmed himself to accept 3 score 10 as the norm for physical existence, and everything shut down prior to that, and then die. So what have we got as a society living to die? So we, in a sense, will generate more problems in the household of life because we are programmed that way. It's when we break that image, we break that mental barrier and see ourselves now objectively from a different dimension, we have a higher spiritual life to contribute to the world in terms of a household. Any more questions? Now, the female body, we still have a few more minutes before 4 o'clock before I do our yoga classes. The female body, again, is designed for certain functions of reproduction. And in the reproduction, it will start a breaking down process. Though it's designed for reproduction, over reproducing in the female body, because of the gradual changes and shifts, the gradual extensions, the chemistry that is altering itself the body will break down. Muscles will change, glands change, and we have a mechanism that is going to go into a state of atrophying sooner than the male body. It may go out of shape quicker than the male body because of these subtle changes. Now, psychologically, from the animal kingdom to the human kingdom, the male body is the body that tends to parade or exhibit. We think in our society the female body is the most exhibiting body, but it's not true. A male mystique or a male masculinity is always a phenomenon when you observe it, that he's always trying to present himself as a male. Don't want to look flabby or short or any, you always want to maintain that hero shape. Now, in the female body, the breakdown comes quicker in the terms of the varicose veins, the kidneys, and the overweight, and the discoloration of the hair. These tend to come on faster in the female body than in the male body. In the male body, the trimness of the physique, the spryness of the walk, and the alertness of being able to compete and be a good orator, or be able to maintain some communication and accepted by the society, this is more dominant in the male than in the female, because the female has already accepted the role of a householder, a wife, children, and therefore can easily slip into those conditions where the body will break down faster. And the only thing that a woman in the female body would have some sense of health or build back its health is when it starts to think of the aging process. The female body does not like the idea of aging. A male body conceives the aging of the body as a sign of maturity, a sign of experience, better equipped to cope. The female body does not see that. Female body sees that as a loss. The male body sees that as an asset. Therefore, we have this peculiar phenomenon of 50-year-old men marrying 10-year-old children or 18-year-old children, girls, because that particular phenomenon is like that. In the olden days, the young virgin was married to the old king because of the particular involvement, age, experience, know-how, all these things were the criteria of which the young maiden was presented to measure up to. The maiden, or the woman's body, when it got past a certain stage, was looked upon as completely going backwards, breaking down. This is a false psychology built up already. But we are stuck with it. We're stuck with it with our advertising systems too. And we have to live with it to understand why we are in this particular process. But a female body and a male body can both grow together and maintain a rhythm together if they understand what is happening. Because it has to do with your own desire and will and respect for your body. The body is a temple of the creative force, and how you treat it all through your life, this is what builds its relationship. So the female body, instead of prematurely aging and breaking down, can start correcting itself by nutrition, by exercise, by massage, by meditation, by baths, and various other methods of maintaining a rhythm, just as much as the male body can build itself back and stabilize a balance. Now, only in the yogis you find that the male body and the female body seems to come up to its purest form of beauty. The older the male body and the older the female body becomes in the study of yoga or practice of the yoga methods, the more refined and more beautiful they seem to be. In fact, they look so serene and graceful. And there we get the term aging with grace. There is a dignified classical walk in the male body and in the female body. It seems that it's been chiseled, all the roughness has been chiseled off in those two bodies for the first time. And you see now some quality of a youthfulness and effervescence in those two bodies brought out now from natural relationship and experience with each other. And in the posture of reconciliation, this is the building quality of the male and female body as we mature in our advanced age. The reliance on the posture, apart from having to release oneself, because in the release neither is the energy wasted, the energy is recycled immediately back. So because it's recycled back, it is a form of self-enforced celibacy without going to the rigid action of calling it celibacy, or without going to the action of abstinence to make it celibacy, because there is really sometimes no release, just barely lying in that reconciliation posture and moving the energies back and forth along the spinal column can set a recycling process. Now, it's easier to relate to a male and female because it's magnetically lined up. But you can't relate to yourself by yourself in a reconciliation posture. There's no such thing. And you can't do it with your own sex because it's not a correct thing either. So with your opposite partner, the reconciliation process is an electromagnetizing process that inhibits the breakdown prematurely of the cells, and the individuals can now have a refined mechanism and a higher sensitivity with each other. The female body will lose the mental image of aging, the mental feeling of getting old or feeling that the world is a drag. In fact, that thought that comes, life begins at 40. In the truly awakened household of male or female, this is a reality. The cells do take on what is called second wind. It's like a runner who is running and he has his first breath. With a tremendous burst, he will get up to a certain point. But some runners or swimmers have this second wind. That means they have an extra burst of energy that they can call on as a reserve and continue and finish up their race. At 40, when the cells reach a certain point, they are in that particular stage where they can either cause a speedy breakdown or a slower breakdown, a faster build-up or a slower build-up. It reaches that moment in existence, because at that point you have to phase into your second experience possible of cosmic consciousness. Cosmic consciousness comes to the individual between 30 to 35 in that one frame of the cells. And between the second frame is between 45 to 65 when the cells are in the second frame. And the third frame is between 85 to 95 on. That's the third frame of the cells go into three frames. And they are designed to release the cosmic consciousness. But every time the cosmic consciousness is released, the vitality or the normal youthfulness of the cells are opened up again. So when I say life begins at 40, a new volume of vitality or vitality, a new sensitivity, youthfulness comes in. Now if it doesn't come through that period, then the third phase, you can have it all back, like in Lahiri Mahesh, he got back his third set of teeth. You know, when he's up in his late years and he got back his virility and everything, all can come back. And not too long ago when I was in South Carolina, I met a man in his 80s, his hair is all black. And they knew him before it was all gray. and he's a strict vegetarian and he lives in the woods and he eats a certain way. And when I was passing through there a year ago, one of the boys were telling me they go out to see him. And he's quite a fellow because they knew him and he had gray hair, and they knew him and he was eating meat and drinking alcohol. And all of a sudden, he has suddenly changed his whole life. And his hair is all black, and he's got all his vitality, and he looks like a young man. And it's not dyed.
So, again,
I like to clear up some things for those who don't know, or who are still laboring on the mental cloud, what the fellowship represent. The primary function of the All Faith Fellowship is not to convert anyone to any belief or from any belief, but merely to present all beliefs, their essential structure, and the underlying basic principles of the common unity among them all, and to emphasize the practical nature by living it. So we will find ourselves discussing philosophies of Yogananda, Charan Singh, Kirpal Singh, Sai Baba, all a host of things that you never heard of, because we're not here to convert or coerce you, but to make you better acquainted with what you have, how to make it work, and to give you an insight into truth from all angles, that you will be able to see the common bond and realize that you are the means for its expression. This removes the doubt that we're trying to make any individual into some type of a special product. Far from the truth. We may seem to talk of more groups and their activities more than others at times and involve ourselves, but that does not try to make you over. The truth is one. The paths are many. The masters, when they sit down, in their presence, you find peace. When you get together with disciples, you find war. Peace is the essential structure of all beliefs. It's achieved by a constant process of behavior. But this process may have different ways of being recognized by various people who apply them. And each aspect is important. It's like a wheel. For each individual, the rim of the wheel is birth to death. The journey is a spoke that connects the rim to the hub. The hub is the ideal, a spiritual life. There are many spokes in a wheel. They're all connected to the one rim and to the one hub. But a wheel is a useless object without an axle. The axle is made of the same material, but it's not connected by way, shape, or form as part of the wheel. The wheel can only rotate around the axle to have some purpose. Yet if there is no grease between the axle and the hub of the wheel, they're going to be seizing up, hardening up of the wheel, and then it's stuck, it can't do nothing. God is like that axle. He's part of the wheel by the structure in which it's made of the same material. We are made of the same material, but God is like the axle apart from us in consciousness. We only relate to Him by the rotation around our beingness in Him, which is the love, and the love is that grease that lubricates you and keep you going. You find it in savor. SEVA and SAVIOUR. Pick your SEVA and you'll also find your SAVIOUR. Because it's all love. Wherever you look at it, whoever presents this particular attitude or list of techniques, essentially they're going to be one thing you're going to learn. Now the masters are all in agreement when it comes to peace. There is no conflict. But if you choose to be one-sided, limited by selecting and shutting out the other, then you don't have the true understanding of the function of what the fellowship represents. The fellowship is trying to make you aware of all the possibilities, all the avenues, and the common unity all in one lifespan. So there is no conflict with Christianity, Mohammedanism, Buddhism, Sikhism, Jainism, Hinduism. There may be conflict in churchianity. All the churchianities of the world may be in conflict with the essential truth of the teachings of the great ones. Christianity is not churchianity. It does not begin or end with the Master Jesus. Christianity is that particular state of being in which the intuitive nature of man is called the Master Consciousness or the Christ Self. We all have a Master Consciousness. We all have to awaken it, but we don't know how to awaken it. And it's not in books. Through the grace of the creative intelligence, the awakening comes by human contact. That's why they say God has become man. We meet that contact at the human level in some form to indicate to us a feeling of what bliss is. If you experience bliss, you may not know what it means or what it really means to you. But if you meet another human being who can arouse that bliss in you and make you have the same experience, and when you leave that person, you can have that same experience in consciousness, then you have found what God truly is. But God is bliss existing within you and can be experienced moment to moment on a conscious level. Like the man said, when the woman asked the priest if there are any books for meditation, she said the priest told her it was for the saints. Meditation is for the saints. So she figured out that she's been shortchanged by her church. She went to go to church to learn how to become a saint, only to find out that meditation is for saints. And the congregation ain't supposed to know nothing about that. So what type of congregation we are creating? If we aren't creating saints, what are we creating? We're only creating a bunch of slaves to a great deal of ideas that are not going to liberate us. The saint, according to your dictionary, is a sane man, a human being, who has achieved eternal patience. And a charitable nature. It is not by the canonization of a church that makes him a saint, nor the miracles that he performs during his life, nor the miracles that are performed after he died by praying to him. These are all the byproducts of the nature of the human being that has been transformed by ethical living. A saint is a human being whose life has been transformed by ethical principles. Once transformed, there is no miracle debarred from his vibrations that he generates. When you set up the necessary receptivity to think of him or generate the desire around him, his vibratory nature can crystallize it, and it begins to happen in your life every day, let alone when he passes out of the body. Now the saint has no desire, but he has one gift, which is called the Christ intelligence in him. That is the ability to crystallize thoughts at will. Not his thoughts, not his desires, but yours who have a need. Because you've got to go to him. He's not going to come to you. He's not going to come and knock you on the head and tell you, I'm a saint. And he's not going to relieve you of your sufferings or your desires unless you turn to him. Because he is sane. He is the only individual that has his true sanity about himself. We are all to some degree insane because we are constantly pursuing our desires in many directions, creating self-destruction with them. A saint don't have any. He has the sanctity of his being by learning to be patient. And he has what is known as the charitable nature, which is giving. And he has learned the secret that giving is getting back. As long as you give, you get back. The more you give, the more you get back. So he would even give his life for you. He has learned that much. He would lay down his life for my sake and have it back. Life unto life restores life and builds life is the essence of the saint's life. This is taken from the Sufi. They're saying exactly what Jesus is saying. If you lay down your life for your fellow man, you will have it back. There is no greater love than he who laid down his life for his fellow man. Once you can recognize these principles in all beliefs, you recognize what is the actual living as a spiritual person, what he has to do. He has to become human. And we say we are human because we look at ourselves. Outwardly, yes, from the standpoint of vision and comparison, we are humans. Emotionally, psychologically, many of us are like animals, insects. And we have all the tendencies of them in our personality makeup. Some are like pigs, some are like dogs, some are like pigeons, some are like cats. It's a strange thing. Those who can see on the inner realm can see your animal tendencies locked up in you. How these tendencies are clawing out from the mechanism. And the aura is there. The aura shows up all the thought patterns, your behavior, your emotional nature is there. Strange phenomenon, but it's there, and we are not aware of it because we are not steady in consciousness. Our minds are wandering all over the place and we can't see it, and therefore we don't recognize it. Now Jesus used a term and he said, cast not your pearls before swine, lest they turn around and rend you. Literally, this is an untruth statement. You can take a handful of pearls and throw it in front of 4 or 5 pigs. They're not going to turn around and run you down into the ground. So he's not talking of a literal pig and a literal pearl concerning human beings. He's talking of the pig-like tendency of the human mind when something of value is presented to them that you cherish as a human being that tends to elevate you. They, with their animosity and their pig-like tendencies or sensory nature that grovel in the senses, in the slop of their ignorance, because they don't know any better, then they will tear into you like wild pigs and like peccaries. A peccary is a wild pig with just 2 horns right in the front of the nose, and it will gore you. Human beings have a tendency to do that when you have something of value that you've discovered in your life that will tend to elevate you, and they do not understand. They will gore you with their criticisms. Before you know it, you have one individual who is literally massacred by vibrations of words, thoughts of animosity, jealousy, anger, hate, resentment. And to be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove, again, that's not a factual fruit. There is nothing more violent than a dove when it fights. When two doves fight, there is no quarter given between the two doves. And a snake is not smart. It can be outwitted. The only reason he's called wise is because he hides under little holes in the ground and caves to avoid detection. When the master was using those terms or symbols, wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove, it's that because when you reach out to hold a dove, it will come right up to your hand. But that is not what is inferred when he's talking about a human being. Wise as a serpent infers the vital life energy that is stored up in the spine, coiled up, just like a serpent is coiled up and hidden in some corner and cannot be recognized. In the base of your spine, coiled up within you, in the coccyx, which shapes like a rattler, and on top of a rattlesnake, it has 3 little lobes. There within that pocket of the spine, we have the latent life power locked up in us. This potential force is a sounding board of life itself. It's the shunt for the earth currents within the human body and the starting point of the male spine and the female spine. This energy rises up. Once it starts rising up out of its cave, it goes into various areas in the spinal sections, in the various areas of the endocrine system, and rises up to the brain. Therefore, you will see in the headdress of the Egyptians the serpent over the headdress, or in the Indian paintings you will see this, the serpent, the head is spread out. They cannot draw life energy as a symbol, otherwise they will draw a jagged line. The only way they can relate to it in terms of art is to draw it like a snake. The reason for that is that when the energy is rising in the spine, it quivers like and goes up the spine. And when it quivers and goes up the spine, then it radiates out from the consciousness. This is the reason to say, wise as a serpent, it is rising and vibrating up. When that energy rises within you, your senses open up in an extrasensory way. But it is not the extrasensory powers that you're concerned with. It is the ethical transformation of your nature that you're more concerned with. It's not impossible to perform psychic abilities. Psychic abilities are byproducts of the rising of the current in the spine. This occurs in everybody to some degree. In fact, you can be born having the psychic abilities and having no ethical nature. Master Jesus merely stated it in a simple way. What a profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul. And that is, utilizing the ego nature to exhibit psychic abilities, having no ethical nature in terms of human relationship with his fellow man. Therefore, he would have to come back by his unscrupulous methods that he used to take advantage of his fellow man by manipulating them. An ethical life is a spiritual life. The greatest saint may never perform a miracle in his whole life. And in fact, the actual truth is, no human being performs miracles. These are the byproducts of the consciousness within the human being at a certain level, crystallizing other people's thoughts. Even Sai Baba goes around, and all the miracles that are attributed to him are in fact the reality that his consciousness crystallizes the people's desires, because Sai Baba is supposed to be of that caliber, and they have a desire and they want something, and he crystallizes it for them. A friend of mine met him, and he visited him for 3 months and saw many manifestations of consciousness. And when he was ready to leave, he with his wife, he didn't say to Sai Baba anything. He wanted a picture. He had his camera around him, but out of respect, he didn't want to photograph the man. So the wife spoke up and said, "Can we have a picture?" He said, "All right." So when her husband took out the camera to take the picture, as soon as he snapped the picture, Sai Baba took it away from him. Stopped him. Then he did like that. Materialized a photograph of himself and gave it to him. Then when he was giving it to him, he took it back again and he did 12 taps, and 12 of them materialized and he gave it to him. Also, he sensed that the man had a deep yearning for some object. The man had a desire for a ring way back in his childhood days. The desire was so strong, but Baba picked up the thought pattern. And he said to him, "You want something?" He says, "No, no." He says, "Yes, you want something." And then he did like that and handed him a ring. And the ring was carved out with the face of Baba on the stone. Well, to his amazement, his desires were crystallized for him by the consciousness of Baba. Baba did not perform a single miracle, because Baba maintains the equanimity of his sanity and his ethical nature at that point in relationship to the frequency, the desire of the individual that is so multitudinous, is suddenly crystallized in time and space. The manifestation is brought into expression. Equally true, the people that lived around Jesus did not have any desire. There's not a single thing that he did is an indication of a miracle. Everything he did was a crystallization of human desire for those who had a desire. The very first crystallization was the desire of his mother for the relatives who were having a wedding and ran out of wine. Now, they drank wine, these people. He attended the wedding as a visitor, as a relative. And the mother had concern because the wine has run out. Insufficient. She knows her son is in that state of awareness. She turns to him and said, "There is no wine." He said, "Woman, what is that to me?" Indicating once and for all, he has no desire. He does not even call her mother, because God is Mother Nature in the world of manifestation. And to call a woman mother, if he's a realized man, would be a violation of the truth. So he had to put her in her place to find her true relationship in connection with the God Self. So he says to her, "Woman, my time has not yet come." A master who is functioning, or the soul that is functioning from the master consciousness, does not violate the time cycle, lest it's accountable to the time cycle. And that fellow is a very, very demanding individual. His name is Carl Time. He's very relentless. He wants every penny of the karma you use up, or the life energy that you use in this world of time. Some people call him Satan. But it's the time cycle in which the master consciousness is aware of the creative forces that are available to it and can use it. So Master Jesus crystallized her desire by love, out of the love for the woman, which is mother to him. He emanates that thought pattern and causes it to crystallize through the time cycle. The normal time cycle to make wine would be X amount of years to grow the grape, X amount of years to harvest it, X amount of time to beat it into wine and ferment it. So that is time plus energy to bring an object into manifestation. The normal method of bring it into manifestation. Having the ability to crystallize thought at will now, which is the Christ intelligence, he does not lack anything, he does not want anything, he does not need anything. Therefore, thought is speeded up now into the time cycle. He is capable of manifesting his thought at the speed of light squared, 186,000 miles per second squared, which is instantaneous, because all matter is energy, all matter is atoms, and all atoms is spirit, and all spirit is thought, and all thought is love. And being a master of the intuitive level, his whole being is love. Everything you touch brings this love into crystallization. But he is a human being. He is that expression of the divinity that has taken the flesh. In the beginning is the Word, the audible life current, and the Word was with God. The Word is in consciousness of time, beyond time. And the Word is God. The audible life current is the eternal now. God is the eternal principle. He's not a man in a throne. Yet the Word has to become flesh, crystallized into substance at a human level. The humanness of the human body is a divinity in matter, and at the same time is a spirit in motion. And that's why a living master is often referred to as God in flesh. That's why you want to come in contact with that expression at times, to recognize it, to understand divinity in action. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt in man, not the animal. Animal has a flesh body, but man's body is flesh. It's the only substance that will hold back on this side of the wall, the flesh, the five elements of the universe that are in conflict, and on the other side of the wall, in unity. When you look at your body, you are looking at the temple of the creative force, a manifestation of spirit, and you don't have to save your soul because your soul, you have to accept it. But you have to accept at the same time the humility of being spirit, which is a hard thing to do, because the ego is striving definitely and desperately to impress by the psychic abilities that it is empowered with. Only at the master level, the capacity to crystallize thought is entrusted, providing the physical frame has accepted the ethical laws of living. You can't be entrusted with such a power if you're unethical. You would make a havoc of the universe. It takes a great deal of spirituality to be ethical, to prevent people from destroying themselves by the misuse of spiritual forces. So when a master is desireless, he has achieved the ethical nature where he is not influenced now by any physical desire, let alone the attempt to force his will upon his society to make them accept divinity. The nature of Christ in man is that ability to materialize thoughts at will. Not the man Jesus. All men have their Christ in themselves. The things I do, you shall do also. And greater things you shall do. You can only do the things that the Christ allows you to do within yourself, and you will only do greater things according to the period and the time cycle that you live in. Now, if Master Jesus was to return back in the physical frame, you would not recognize him. In the first place, you would not even accept him, because we are already turned off to the long beard, the long hair, and the sandals and the beads. So what would he come back in that type of a dress to impress us with? Now if he come back in the Ivy League suit, you can't accept him either. If he comes in a space suit, you can't accept him either. So crying for the second coming of Christ, what are you crying for? Some individual that they come, beep, 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 here I am, Jesus Christ. You got the wrong impression of what the thing is all about. Masters are always in the world. There is never a moment that a self-realized or a God-realized man is not in the world. They have always been, will always be, as long as we exist. From the dawn of creation to the return of creation back into itself, there will always be God-realized men. But to understand God-realized men, we have to understand them on a human level. And that is very difficult, because we have desires and they don't have desires. We think we have to save our souls. They tell us we are souls because they know they are souls. They tell us, don't try to save it, try to express it. We can't accept that because pain and suffering is too great in our lives. They show us, they will take any pain and suffering and rise above it. So soul is that true beingness, and in its nature and in its magnitude is love in action. If we go through all the various desire forms that have been crystallized by the master's consciousness, you will see there are no miracles. But there is a law underlying the crystallization of thought. God does not work in miracles. He works by laws. The creative intelligence works by laws. And these laws are all locked up in us. We don't invent them. We simply come to relate ourselves to them and release them. There is a law working inside of us, and it's the law of light. This whole universe is a congealed form of light. It's built like a hologram. One cosmic laser beam in a three-dimensional expression of mass. Therefore, we are crystallized in the laser beam of light, and we have our mass, our three-dimensional experience. But we live in nine dimensions. We can only seem to utilize a few of the dimensions because we don't understand what a dimension is as yet. We know of length, breadth, and depth. We call that the three-dimensional world. But these are in terms of using the ruler as a device to measure length, breadth, and depth. We also live in the universe of motion while we're in length, breadth, and depth. And that motion is called time. And the only way you measure time is by another ruler. It's called a watch. You are watching the motion of the earth in relation to another heavenly mass, and therefore relating the measurement as time between light and shadow, or light and darkness. There is no time. There is motion. But the motion gives the illusion of time necessary for counting, necessary for action, necessary for relating. Now, there is no space either, but there is celestial pressure where all masses revolve and curve upon themselves and live in a continuum. The mass is held together by the external pressure of push and pull, known as centrifugal and centripetal energy or forces. Therefore, it retains its shape. If you were to take away these pressures, everything will dissolve back into pure energy, and energy is light, and it's only self-contained by its own electron field. And this electron field is called spirit in the Bible. So man is not discovering anything new. He's not making any new universe. He's simply realizing that God is around him as spirit, and that his spirit holds the atom, and that no religion in the earth plane or the planet earth has all the answers about God. Every atom is his throne. Every expression of thought is his presence. So which religion in the earth plane, let alone trying to describe what the divinity is, it's limited. We have to see religion as that particular process in which man finds himself identified in the spirit through action. Therefore, in the galactic system, religion is often termed as celestial harmony. On the earth plane, it is called relating to the Godhead, or returning back to the Godhead, or binding yourself back to the Godhead. The Latin word, religiar. Religiar, to bind, re, back. To bind back. If man binds himself back to his Creator, there are only four ways he can do that. One, by prayer. That particular privilege in which he's endowed to communicate with the creative principle by thought. Two, by reason, logic, and experimentation to the satisfaction of his senses, lest he feel that he's a superstitious being, to give him this sense of beingness or ego that he is conquering or dominating the world by his own volition. Third, meditation, the art of conscious shutdown by conscious volition, the art of conscious sleep, to rejuvenate the body at will. And meditation is only mental energy directing your individual thought activity towards an intuitive observation of oneness of the noumena. This identity brings you oneness with the spirit. The fourth way you can go back to the creative source is the art of conscious death. Scientific life control in which you are capable of shutting down the vital energy, turning it off at will. No man take my life from me. I have the power to lay it down and pick it up. I live and die daily in the Lord. This is conscious control of the life energy of shutting down the heart and lungs at will. The individual who knows this thoroughly does not die by any karmic reaction due to unfinished desires. He alone has the ability to shut the energy. He alone picks it up back. He alone can sever the astral cord between the astral body and the physical body. So the point is this: religion on the earth plane has nothing to do with the names of the founders. It has to do with a cosmic law of relating back to the universal creative energy, the audible life current. We can do that by sound in the form of prayer and by the constant repetition of the prayer. We can do it also by logic, analysis, and experimentation to find the source of the audible current in matter. We can do it by meditation, in which we have oneness with matter, oneness with spirit. And finally, we metamorphose ourselves from a grubby non-human being that is subject to decay at death. We can now change this mass by an ethical life into a non-decaying mass of death. When this body has thrown off corruption and taken on non-corruption, it is a glory unto the Lord. To him that overcometh, I will not send forth a second time. You become a cosmic butterfly. You have resurrected yourself by ethical life. The whole purpose of Master Jesus or any master on this earth is to show that the ethical life is a transforming process of changing this physical flesh into spirit, whereby it does not decompose no more. It can be resurrected and taken at will into the galactic systems. Man is on his way back home from the celestial throne of God where he came from. By his own ego, he trapped himself in the time cycle. And as we sow, that we reap. We are here merely not by the divine law, but we are here by our own misuse of our own free will. And the illnesses we incur are the results of this misuse. But we should be thankful that we can recognize it while we're alive in the body. You can't recognize it when you're outside of the body. And you can't correct it when you're outside of the body. And you can't make any contribution when you're outside of the body. The human body, or the flesh, is the testing ground for the spirit. Blessed is he who has been born and has found divine certitude and trust in the spirit of his flesh. That is from the Jain writing. Jesus will put it another way for you. seek ye first the kingdom of God, which is within you, and all these things will be added unto you. You see, it does not matter where you hear the truth, it's the same thing they're talking about. To him that overcometh, I'll not send forth a second time, I'll make him a pillar in the house of the Lord. It means the same thing. Any questions?
What clarified the statement that my time has not yet come that it's going to change the water of life?
A master functioning from the fifth level is the intuitive level, cannot usurp the right of interfering with other people's thought activities or desires. He has a time cycle. Remember, he's living in a creation that is governed by time. A master came